When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And tonight, Justice Gertrude Torkornoo, the Chief Justice, has declared war on corruption in the judiciary, pledging a relentless effort to rid the institution of corrupt elements. The Chief Justice, in a rare public event where she addressed the nation on her vision for the judiciary, says there are certain unknown faces who engage in corruption in the name of the judiciary. Yes, after the announced expose on corrupt judges, the institution is still yet to fully recover, with successive Afrobarometer reports showing that citizens still perceive the judiciary as corrupt. Now, this is what the Chief Justice says she is desperate to deal with. Listen.
I deeply crave, along with all well wishes, I'm sure, to change the tag of corruption, ineptitude, and inefficiency around the neck of the judiciary and judicial service of Ghana. We cannot do this without the support and attention of all stakeholders. The Bangalore Principles of Judicial Conduct and the Latimer House Principles are international instruments that Ghana's judiciary are committed to. In order to shake off these tags, training needs to be supplemented with consistent culture-changing strategies to deepen ethical models of work in the courts. Judicial administration must close the gaps through which court users are subjected to exploitation and rent-seeking behavior. This demands the removal of as much of the human interfacing that court work is exposed to. Court officials are expected to work with independence, with impartiality, competence, and integrity. Much of these ethical values are lost in the heavy traffic of human interfacing between court officials and court users, including unknown brokers functioning around the courts. The vision for producing culture-changing reorientation programs cannot be achieved without the active participation, the active partnership and support of stakeholders, including communities of businesses and donors.
Okuku Asante of our Legal Affairs Desk was there for us and joins me in the studio right now. The Attorney General was also there and he spoke. And he has some words for the Chief Justice in terms of what he believes she should also be focusing on.
Yes, according to Godfred Yeboah Adame, there are a lot of complaints about what he terms as the ineptitude of some judges. He believes that the Chief Justice's goal is really laudable, but for that to succeed, she should be able to deal with the issue of ineptitude judges that so many lawyers have complained about.
Your Ladyship, whilst encouraging you for this laudable initiative, may we remind ourselves that the greatest number of complaints about the justice delivery system in Ghana border on ineptitude of judges, attitude towards litigants and lawyers, as well as delays with the conclusion of cases. I'm of the fervent belief that your vision will result in a reduction of this phenomenon. Ultimately, in my respectful view, there also needs to be a rethinking of the exercise of the jurisdiction of the Supreme Court to ensure that the workload of the Supreme Court is manageable and conducive to efficiency. Drawing on the practice and experience in other jurisdictions in and outside the common law world, the Supreme Court ought to be able to, by recourse to the enactment of regulations governing the multiplicity or jurisdictions conferred on it, and within the constraints of the Constitution, restrict the number of cases it has, especially on appeals from the Court of Appeal to the Supreme Court. This will result in the delivery of more quality justice by the highest court of the land. I say that it is a digitized environment. I say that a digitized environment results in transparency, accountability, and efficiency in the public sector, and ultimately helps to eliminate and prevent corruption. The prospect of improved productivity and reduction of costs digitization brings requires that the judiciary embraces same fully. I have no doubt that we will achieve a fully digitized environment in the tenure of her leadership, the Chief Justice. Indeed, I see the era in which there will be the need for more virtual courthouses easily accessible to all from any part of the world, rather than physical courthouses constructed in communities and accessible to only a few, much closer than anticipated.
And Kweku, the Chief Justice obviously did this today. A national address was pretty rare. Also present was a Vice President.
Yes, the Vice President talks about what he believes to be the government digitalization agenda, catching up with the judiciary. He says he's excited that the judiciary is also taking a step in coming close to digitalization. And as far as he's concerned, government is willing to give every support to the Chief Justice to achieve this.
Justice is not about its trappings, but its utility. I am happy that the Honorable Lady Chief Justice, just like her predecessors, has answered this important call, and by doing so, is leading the third arm of the state to make the promise of our nation evident in the lives of our people and extend to all the protection that is theirs by birth. I note with great admiration and excitement the new impetus, focus, energy, and dynamism that Her Ladyship has brought to the administration of justice since she took over the reins of office less than a year ago. It is this new zeal and sense of urgency that has culminated in the vision that we are launching today, which would be the blueprint for her administration and point the way for the judiciary and the judicial service towards the goal that meets the justice demands of the 21st century and beyond.
I'm joined right now by lawyer and vice president of Imani Africa, Kofi Bentle, joins me on phone. Also joining me is Professor Kweku Asari. He's a democracy and development fellow at the Ghana Center for Democratic Development, CDD. I'm also joined by Bernard Ahiafo. He's a ranking member on the Constitutional and Legal Affairs Committee in Parliament. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me here on Top Story. And I want to start with you, Professor Kweku Asari. There's something that the Chief Justice said today that I want to put to you. Quote, she said, "The judiciary is not known for speaking beyond the corridors of the courts, and so it will not surprise me if many find this morning's event odd." Do you find this odd?
Thank you, Evans. Actually, I don't find it odd at all. I welcome it, and I commend the Chief Justice for the initiative. Look, the ability of the court to fulfill its core mission and perform its function critically depends on public trust and confidence. At a time when, in my opinion, public trust and confidence are at a low ebb, it is really important, and I would say it's an excellent idea, for the Chief Justice to show up and speak to the people. I would advise her to do more rather than less of that. Of course, it is not always necessary to come out the way she did, but through the use of social media and other such outlets, the courts can maintain this channel of communication with the people. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. In Kenya, whenever the Supreme Court speaks through a court opinion, there's a court opinion that they write for the participants. And contemporaneously, they issue a summarized version of what it is that they are saying and make that immediately available to the media and to the public. So the public hears the court speaking in a language that they can understand, because often the opinion itself is laced with technicalities and not too many people in the public are interested in reading that. But the court gets around that by issuing this contemporaneous simple press release that is understandable by most people. So the short answer to your question is I don't find it odd at all. I welcome it. I want to see more of that. It doesn't necessarily have to be the Chief Justice coming out and, you know, with so many people talking. It can be through multiple channels. It has to be through their opinions and stuff like that.
I want to bring in Kofi Bento. Kofi, what about the risk of overexposure?
Good evening to everyone. Honestly, although theoretically you can say there's a risk of exposure, I don't see it. There is rather an overriding need for us to make justice and the delivery of justice and the institutions that deliver justice more amenable to ordinary understanding, appreciation, and acceptance. I think the traditional view that we ought to manage ourselves in a way that is esoteric, that ordinary people cannot understand, is actually not good for us. I am even looking for a day when this whole idea of discussing cases in court is no longer considered as contemptuous. I think that this fear of overexposure has rather created a situation where there is distrust in terms of how justice is wrapped. So in short, I think the judges and the persons who are in charge of this are sufficiently matured, sufficiently experienced, and know how to conduct themselves properly in order not to overexpose themselves or the profession or the judicial service per se. I am not saying the risk is zero, but it is not more than any other risk. So this is a good thing. We must continue to work at it to make justice more understandable by the average person.
And Bernard Ayafo, you're the ranking on the Constitutional Legal Affairs Committee in Parliament. Last week, the CJ, for the first time, held a press conference. He invited the press in. He spoke. And then she opened herself up to be questioned. And then this today, we're just seeing her address a nation. Are you in support of this at the committee level? Hello, Bernard. Hello, Mr. Ayafo. I may have lost him there. But I want to take that question to Professor Sari. Professor Sari, so the question about overexposure, which I put to Kofi Bento, I mean, considering how politically polarized our environment is, the executive gets his fair share of mudslinging. We've seen the politicians in Parliament get same, and then the bickering and back and forth then muddies every issue that we talk about. There's a real fear by some, and I've heard, for example, Professor Bafo Ejimendria warn that once you have the Chief Justice engaging these issues and holding press conferences, you're dragging the judiciary into this arena where it then become, okay, fair game for the judiciary to be drawn into our very polarized political environment. Professor Sari.
No, I don't see it that way, unless the judges are coming to talk politics. They are not coming to talk politics. They should stay as far as they can away from the politics. And one way of showing that they are staying as far as they can from the politics is actually to come out and explain some of the things that they are doing. Once people have a good understanding and perhaps they accept what they are being told, then whatever the court is doing could be interpreted in a different framework rather than in a political framework. Look, most of the problems that the court tend to have arise when the court is dealing with matters of public interest and debate, often centered around politics. Once they render a decision in these type of cases, people on the political sphere or people on the political grounds tend to politicize what it is that the courts have done. And there's no problem with the Chief Justice or some member of the court or through a social media release for the court to clarify the principles that have guided their opinion so that the ordinary man or woman can understand that, yes, although we are dealing with a political issue, here is the reason why the court decided the issue in this way rather than that way. Having said that, I think the court has to go beyond merely speaking and let their opinions and their actions and their verdicts reflect what it is that they are also preaching. So, for instance, I would have been very glad if the Chief Justice came in and said, from today on, ex-party communication with me or any member of the judiciary is banned. If you are a party and you want something done to you in litigation, make sure you are filing that in the registry so that it can be made available to your adversary. It should never happen that I am in a dispute with my good friend Kofi Bentel, and then I'm able to write privately to the Chief Justice for something to be done, and he has no knowledge of what it is that I'm writing to him, to the Chief Justice, and then all of a sudden we think that is okay. That is not okay, no matter how much you come out to explain what it is that the court is doing. As long as you allow such an archaic practice, then the public perception will not be changed. So actions, stop these ex-party communications. Second, a few months ago, a former justice of the Supreme Court, Justice Atuguba, came out and said that when he was on the court, there was a time when he was frozen. In other words, he was not put on panels because of some disagreement that he had with the then Chief Justice. This is a very serious allegation. And I would have expected when the Chief Justice came to give this press conference, that would be numero uno, the first thing that he addressed, that, look, we hear you, that you are not happy or you don't understand the process by which we choose our panels. And here is the process, or here is what I'm going to do to make sure that people have confidence in the way the panels are structured. If you just come and give kumbaya speeches on there will be no corruption and so on, people will just listen and say, oh, we've heard all of this before. We want you to have key performance indicators, specific measurable outcomes that 2 months from now or 3 months from now or 6 months from now that we can look at and then see whether or not the things that you are saying are really happening. For instance, I would have preferred for the Chief Justice to come out and say, look, from now on, we are going to set a standard time for filing an application and completing the case. So for all land cases, from the initial filing of the application to completion of the case, the time budget is 24 months. For a family law or divorce case, the time budget is 18 months, and so on and so forth. So for all the cases that we hear in this country, litigants have a fair idea of how long the case is going to be. Obviously, in some cases, we are going to exceed the budget. In some cases, we are going to fall under the budget. But at least there's a budget. And because of the budget, we are able to know when there are variances. And then we can try to investigate the variance to know why in specific cases there have been delays. Another thing that I expected her to talk about, because it is one of the things that clearly allow the public to lose confidence in the court, what happens in election petitions? The court should come out with very clear rules. In my opinion, for instance, if there is a parliamentary election dispute, there should be no midnight injunctions. By midnight injunctions, I mean an injunction given by a high court judge to restrain someone who has been duly elected from being seated in parliament on the day that parliament is being inaugurated. That should never happen. Similarly, when it comes to presidential petition, but all other petitions, as long as we hear the petitioner's case and the court decides that there's a prima facie case and the case should continue, then the election manager should be made the star witness. He or she should be compelled to testify because it is his or her work that is being challenged. And as a duty bearer, he or she should never be in a position to say, well, I'm not going to testify. No, you have to testify. If you don't testify, you are saying there's something about your work that you cannot come out publicly to defend. If the court allows you to get away with that, I don't care how many press conferences that the court is issuing, people will not have confidence in the court.
And this is in direct reference, I believe, to what we saw in the last election petition with the NDC and the current EC chairperson. But stay with me. I want to bring in Kofi into this. Kofi, one of the key things that the Chief Justice talked about today was corruption in the judiciary. And then she goes ahead to talk about what she wants to do to rid the judiciary of corruption. This has been a tag that has been there for a long time. The Afrobarometer tells its own story that the perception is still that a judiciary is corrupt. Does this help at all, this transparency that she's attempting to embark on? But substantively, what must she do to deal with it?
Yeah, I mean, there is a perception. But what we all have to be clear about is that it is not always that perception is reality. But the fact that there is a perception means it has to be dealt with. So I agree that she has to take steps to deal with that. Some of that perception is driven simply by the delays in the system. And I agree with Professor Akoko Asare when he says that there must be a time budget for every case. And these things, until they are done, it seems as if they are impossible. But if you file a case, even, and let's say it's a land case, or it's an estate case, or whatever case there is, there must be a certain conventional wisdom about how long it must take. And in my view, for instance, if you file a land case, and the case goes beyond 1 year, it should be flagged, and somebody must review it beyond the judge who is handling that particular case. Because then that person with a fresh eye can give some sort of suggestions about how to expedite the case and get rid of it. We don't have time, so I don't want to go into some details. But there are cases which have taken 5 years, and there's no reason why. These things fuel a sense of corruption. If that time budget is exceeded and somebody else looks at the case, there will be a better confidence amongst the players that somebody has not taken money to delay the case or to rule or to do something untoward about it. All that said, let us keep in mind that there are thousands of cases that go to our courts. And I, as a practitioner in the courts, regardless of my complaints around our system, can say confidently that the overwhelming majority of cases and judges conduct themselves properly without corruption. It is not possible that there will not be one or two bad nuts. But it is important for us all to appreciate that the overwhelming majority of our justices are very good. They do their job and they are not corrupt. We should keep working to root out those corrupt ones and the ones that unduly delay cases and bring the whole administration of justice into disrepute. And I think that this Chief Justice should really focus on bringing more IT, more processes, more transparency, so that even if things go wrong for anybody, they will not believe it is the result of corruption. So indeed, we should be minded that these efforts at making the delivery of justice better will actually lead to a reduction in the perception of corruption. But it is indeed a problem, and this should help resolve it.
And we've talked about corruption, but just before we wrap up in a couple of minutes, one minute for you on another subject that is tends to pitch the judiciary against political interests, political parties, etc. This perception of bias. We've seen an NDC statement a couple of weeks back which alleges that. This is not the first time we've seen it. We remember the famous many ways of killing a cat. We've seen it through our political history. how the judiciary is attempting now to give us a new sense of itself. How does it address that problem?
Well, there's a saying that justice must be done and must be seen to be done. And I think that's the challenge that our justices must accept and deliver on. I think too many times justice is not seen to be done. And I believe that the transparency that the present Chief Justice is bringing will help explain why certain things happen the way they happen. The recent case is the case of Honorable Dafi Amepo,
yeah,
and the thinking that one case was expedited, the other case was not expedited. I have been in cases where I think the delays were unexplainable. For instance, the Domelobo case. You have a case where there's a time-bound arrangement. Beyond a certain point, it's moot. That case stayed there. We tried and tried and tried. It wasn't called. The man was fired, and then later it was ruled that he was fired unlawfully. At the time, you could have done something about it to save the situation. You didn't do it. So as the person involved, I will feel that you intentionally did something by tweaking the time to make my case a foolish case, even though I have won. It is the job of the Chief Justice and all the Chief Justices or the Justices to make sure that we don't leave the halls of justice feeling that they have put their hands on the scale by tweaking the processes and doing things like these delays. If there are real reasons why these delays happen, they should be explained. Mm. I think they owe us that. Until they do that, there will always be the perception that there is bias. Mm,
I see. And Mr. Sorry, I have just a minute. On that same point of this perception that there is bias against political interests, how does the Chief Justice go about dealing with this particular one?
Oh, you can only do that with your work. You know, when it comes to these things, it's not what you talk about, it's what you show people. You got to be consistent in what it is that you are doing. I also think that our courts tend to want to schedule a hearing for almost every case that is filed. That is unfortunate, especially in an appellate court such as the Supreme Court. When the parties have filed their briefs, it is acceptable. In fact, here in Florida, where I practice, seldom do you even know, do you see who your appellate justice are. You file your briefs, and then some weeks after, you get a note that your judgment is ready. They read the briefs, and they come out with their decision. So if you take the two injunctions that were filed at the Supreme Court, the justices of the Supreme Court could have ruled on both at the same time and can rule now without having the parties appear before them. We know from several precedents what these decisions should be, and I think it has to also be made clear that it is extremely difficult for an individual to injunct either the executive or the parliament. The court should make that very clear.
Yeah.
If you don't make that clear, and there are two similar cases, you address one and you don't address one, I don't care how many times you talk, people are still going to have that perception.
Prof, thank you very much. And that's Professor Sari there, helping us walk through this. I guess first time it's happened, very rare, showing by the Chief Justice addressing the nation, putting out her vision, and we are scrutinizing that. What are your own thoughts about the war that she's declared on corruption in the judiciary? Send me a WhatsApp, 055-1111-997. Newsnight starts right now.
Good evening and welcome to Newsnight. Whilst the ECG maintains there's no load shedding, Parliament Mines and Energy Committee has established that the erratic power supply facing the country is because of a power generation deficit.
We are currently not shedding load, so we are not shedding load.
It's been confirmed that there's a deficit. Even as at yesterday, they were shedding load. And so clearly this issue of transformers is neither here nor there.
But ECG is tonight fighting back, accusing the power transmitter Gridco of making erratic daily demands for load management that it says has become, quote, an irritation and disturbance to customers. We have exclusive details from the ECG's letter to the energy minister following a Gridco complaint, and then later.
When the people bring their jobs here, like, they want it fast, so we don't have any reason to delay them. But since Monday up till now, we don't have light here. So all the work that they brought, they have to take them back.
While the power play in the sector continues, we'll tell you the devastating effects the recent power outage is having on the print and press business in the first episode of our Doomso Diaries. You want to stay for details of that. Also tonight, don't spare anyone who will use social media to incite violence and create a fear and panic before, during and after election 2024. That's the Interior Minister Henry Cortes Charge, the IGP, Dr. George Akufo-Dampare.
Your statements, your actions should not incite the public. They must not create fear and panic in the public. Free speech, free association, free movement, but we must be guided by our statements not to create fear and panic.
We'll give you details of that when we get into the election headquarters.
And in business, World Bank projects about 2.5% end-of-year growth rate for Ghana, slightly lower than government targets captured in the 2024 budget.
And in sports, following the historic semi-final qualification, Dreams FC is now targeting the $2 million cash prize in the CAF Confederations Cup.
And much later, the National Health Insurance Authority to provide one free medical checkup for every Ghanaian annually, a new vision to promote healthier population and drive down the country's disease burden.
I'm saying that let's start by screening the diseases under a package earlier for every Ghanaian to benefit from it.
We have exclusive details as the scheme plans to enroll every unregistered Ghanaian on their next visit to the hospital. That and more in tonight's edition of Newsnight. You're welcome to join us with your thoughts and your comments via WhatsApp is 055-1111-997. I am MFR Powell.
And my name is Evans Mensah.